What up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, I have a new friend who I've made. His name is Vinny Minchillo. I think I'm pronouncing the name correctly. Vinny is a principal at a marketing agency in Dallas, Texas, or in Plano, Texas, I should say. The name of the agency is Glasshouse Strategy. Vinny has a really cool stories from his marketing days. He's been at it for a while. We get into a bunch of that stuff. He's done marketing for brands as well as political campaigns. So he's done a lot of cool stuff. Did even stand up early in his days, which we get a little bit into it. I'm a big fan of comedy, so I think he's as well. But Vinny does a bunch of things aside from marketing. He's collects typewriters, owns a vintage MG car, which is, I think, a British car. I didn't know much about it, but I post photos of it when this podcast is out. I'll post it on Instagram so you guys can take a look at it. But it was a fun conversation. Really enjoyed it. Hopefully you guys like it as well. Without further ado, Vinny Minchillo.
Television died in 2009. Like, died. There is no television anymore. That doesn't exist.
Oh man, they are so old.
I was super paranoid, as one would be anyway, but I kept thinking, oh, they're gonna come back for me, they're gonna come back for me.
But I do love cake and candy and sweets.
If you're not questioning yourself, and you may be absolutely right in that thing, but if you never question it, how do you know that that's the best way?
The joke is I came out of the womb running. Like, I've always been super active.
Knowing that too much of this shit is like, that hurts, because now how do you explain that?
Yeah, I mean, where else would you go for stew? Walmart.
All right, tell me everything.
I'll start off. If you don't mind muting the cell phone.
I know, it's trying to get it to behave.
Yeah.
But I think it's...
And for the Vinny, thank you for doing it. Welcome to the podcast. For the standalone, this podcast being standalone, can you do a quick intro? Even though I usually do an intro in the beginning, but just who you are,
right?
Name, just a little bit.
Sure, I'm Vinny Minchillo, and I own an ad agency in Plano, Texas. And I've been in the advertising and marketing business. God, it feels like since the 50s, but not quite that long, but always been interested in it. And I'm a writer by trade, creative guy by trade. So I was always, you know, coming up with ads, working on jingles, working on slogans and all that kind of stuff. And that's how I got into the ad business. You know, I wanted to be a stand-up comic, but I couldn't stay up very late. So, you know, stand-up comedy is kind of a late-night business.
Yeah.
So I tried radio. And which was great because it's an early morning business and I could get up really early. But that business is kind of, you know, the weirdness of radio now. And got into advertising, which is I think, a great way to make a living as a writer. But then it bloomed into all these other thoughts of how to, you know, gee, how do we get people to buy one product over the other? How do we get them to do what we want them to do? And so it's become a real fascinating journey.
Can I ask, I'm fascinated with the comics, and I feel like a lot of them are, even though comedy's been around forever, as far as them, you know, a lot of them are podcasters now. A lot of them, even though before, I feel like it seems like three guys got a special, and, you know, Bill Cosby or whoever was, you know, they're like, this is the guy, and everyone's trying to fight for that
space. Are
we
allowed to talk about Bill Cosby anymore?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like it's free for all, yeah. Good old Bill. Someone said he looks like a burned turtle. I've heard a comment of that. But as far as how old were you when you were trying to do stand up?
I was in my 20s, and I was married, had a young child, and I'm just not a late night guy.
Is it tougher? I'm assuming having a family, having those commitments, because I'm assuming you going to open mics. And
it was always tough because I was trying to build a regular advertising career. And a comedy career. And it was sort of funny. It did here in Dallas. And the MC was a guy named Bill Engvall, who's now one of, you know, he's a big famous comic. You know,
yeah.
He's one of the, you know, the you know, with Jeff Foxworthy,
yeah,
and Ron
White. Blue collar comedy
guys.
That's funny.
And he was this sort of hip, urban Jerry Seinfeld kind of comic. And then he moves to L.A. and he's suddenly got a Texas accent.
He did not have
that accent when he was in Dallas. But he's a funny dude.
That was my next question. Is that, like, when, even though you were in Dallas versus L.A. or New York, where I feel like a lot of comedy has come from,
Do you? So that was one of the famous guys. I'm just curious to see if anyone else you were like, oh, I remember that guy.
That's the only guy really who came out of that and got famous. And you know, and that was sort of in the pre-internet days where you had to go to LA or New York to be famous. Now, yeah, you can be famous from, you know, Sri Lanka if you want.
Right. Exactly. As long as the content is good and people find you. And I feel like nowadays, even though there's overbearing amount of content and everyone's putting out, I feel like it's too much in many ways. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, when I was doing podcasts, I felt like I was late to the party. But even when I was late to the party, I feel like when I speak to people, they still like, oh, some people say, yeah, I'm familiar with podcasts, or some people heard of a word podcast, but never listened to one. I have a few people saying, well, where do you find one, or how do you get one? And which is fine. Obviously, I was there in that case too, because I think it's one of those platforms that was created and no one's really, it was kind of sleeper.
It's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But being late to the party puts you in really good company, Alex, because there's a little company called Apple Computer who was late to every party. If you look at all the innovations over all the years, from the personal computer, they weren't the first. From the music player, they weren't the first. Smartphone, they weren't the first. But when they arrived late to the party, they arrived bringing some really good stuff.
Sure. Well, that's... My thought is that I try to just not harp on things I missed or things that are better or who is better. I'm just trying to concentrate what I'm doing and just kind of keep going and, you know, making better and becoming better and essentially improving everything that I do, however slow or fast, because I feel like it's the death of, you know, looking at someone's like, well, that guy's doing better, or this guy has a studio, or, you know, there's a variety of that. So just
there's a lot of pressure now, I think. You know, like, and you bring up comics, and I think it's a good metaphor for other businesses too. But like, if you're a comic, right, and you've got to be constantly pushing out great content on YouTube, or great content that can be shared on social. And if you've got a Twitter feed, well, you better be funny 3 times a day.
Yeah.
You know, for free. Right.
Sure.
You know, and that's a big commitment for a return that you hope is going to come.
I think and I would agree with that. I've read, I think it was a while back, Tina Fey said, I think she's still not on Twitter, where they were asking her, you know, she was America's sweetheart in the sense of comedy. Everyone loved her. She's cute. She writes well. And I'm not sure if it changed since then. I haven't really followed her, but she was not on most social media or any social media. And she's like, it's so hard to write those jokes. I'm not going to just give them away, you know, because everyone's like, get on Twitter, because you see so many celebrities or comedians that are like, have built platforms, but they are giving it away.
And she doesn't have to. I'm sure she's got a first look deal with NBC Universal, and she's always, you know, so whatever she wants to do, she'll have the opportunity to do.
Yeah.
Whereas all those other comics, you know, are hustling. Like, you mentioned Joe Rogan before we started talking. Joe Rogan's making plenty of money on his podcast.
Sure.
But for every Joe Rogan, there's a million guys, you know, writing jokes when they should be working.
Yeah. Well, and he himself, I think, says that he has a 2 or 3 careers that accidentally happened, that he, you know, podcasts, which he kept saying, you know, when I was doing it for 9 years or however long he's been doing, he said it was people like, get that thing out of here, stop recording, it's like, it's dumb. And he was like, nah, he's like, I think there's something to it. And then he's like, I would never thought, because people kept saying, like, you're this standard for, you know, media, where a lot of people go to, where you're like that trusted guy, where you're just a guy's guy, you know, like, people like, Joe will ask them the real stuff, and even though he's just kind of like, I'm just shooting the shit here, I have a scientist, I have Vinny on, I have comedian on, and I'll be like, let's talk about dicks, or let's talk about whatever, and they just shoot the shit, and it's literally room, you know, him, producer, and the guest, which I feel like, you know, CNN or NBC or anyone has a 50 people working on any show in a giant budget, where he's like, I can make all the money in the world, and I still have, you know, just me and the guy, or maybe him and two guys.
So. And the word that comes up there is authenticity.
Sure.
You know, Joe has certainly done plenty of super well-produced comedy specials and Fear Factor and all the other TV shows. So it's kind of cool when somebody like that just sits down and just hangs out with a friend and talks.
And, you know, it's funny.
Like we are doing right now.
Exactly. As much as I like Rogan's podcast, his comedy, I've listened to at this point 2 specials, like the 2 recent ones. It's okay.
He's
like,
okay.
There's a lot better comic, at least in my taste.
Yeah.
I like the kind of offensive, very edgy, and I think people like that. Anyone likes that. Just sometimes you don't analyze that, but like the idea is that, oh, I didn't see this coming. you know, like I didn't see this happening, or like I like Jim Jefferies, I like Neil Brennan, I don't know if you know, but at the same time, when almost like the opposite, I for some reason drawn, even though it's very clean, Jim Gaffigan,
sure,
who's very very clean, but man, it's, I feel like if it's even harder to be clean and that good,
right?
I feel like the recent stuff he just put out, I thought it was just
very, he's a great old school comic.
Yeah, he's delivering just the themes that he goes into. I'm like, that's, I was like, interesting angle of, because I look at things sometimes the same way. I'm like, why are they doing this? Why is it this way? And again, I have a fascination where I like to stand up. I've never tried it. I thought about it, but never end up. Again, between scheduling and everything else, I never pulled the trigger on it.
You, it is the most raw thing you'll ever do. To stand up in front of people with a microphone and for them all to go, all right, make me laugh. And when it goes well, it's the biggest rush.
Yeah.
And it's even kind of cool when it goes bad, when you really bomb, when it really goes bad, that's a whole different set of raw emotions. So it's I'd highly recommend it to anybody.
Even to try.
Just because of just the emotional roller coaster of it, you'll learn a lot about yourself.
How long did you do it for?
I did it for a few years, you know. And I've always, but I've always written and always done stuff. But I don't have the stage fright bone, so I'm always happy. I'm always happy to get up and bomb or laugh or whatever.
You were just saying as far as emotions. I was just listening to who's kind of a new guy on the podcast platform, Dax Shepard.
Sure.
He had Pete Holmes, comedian. Yep, sure. I don't know if you listened to that one where he said, Pete's like, I've never done cocaine, but when you have that stand up, when it's really the rush, he's like, it's better than cocaine. And Dax is like, well, I've done cocaine. It's definitely not better than cocaine. But he's like, but it's different.
No, but it is a huge adrenaline rush. You just do 5 minutes and you have a crowd of people, 100 people laughing at you. Yeah. It's the best thing in the world. It's great.
Can I change topic a little bit?
Yes.
Quick question on advertising side.
Yeah.
I've read that you've done, obviously, the corporate stuff, the just variety of brands, but you also went into political side of things.
Right.
Which one came first, I'm assuming?
I did corporate stuff for, more traditional stuff for probably 20 years. And a lot of big brands, American Airlines and Subaru, Nationwide Insurance, Bank of America, JCPenney. So I worked on that for a long time. And it was really, really fun, great life, great time to be in that business. And then in about 2002, I've always been politically active personally, and I remember there was a big campaign going on, and I saw all the ads, and I went, well, these ads are terrible. Somebody's got to do something to make these ads better. So I started freelancing and just loved it. And politics is really sports for the unathletic. It's a big rush. It's a lot of fun, and it's a win or lose proposition. You know, like in corporate advertising, if we were the number two brand, you still make a lot of money. Your company, your client does great.
Right.
In politics, if you're number two, everybody's unemployed. So,
right. So
you know, it's a lot at stake, and it's a real, there's a lot of juice to it.
Who did you start with? Who was the first candidate?
The first candidates I worked on, a friend of mine who runs a political ad agency, needed some help. He had just picked up three campaigns. And so the first thing I ever did was not a city council race, but there were three United States Senate races in Missouri and Georgia and Minnesota, three super competitive Senate races. One of them that ended in the opponent dying in a plane crash. So it was like I had a whole career of political advertising weirdness in 3 months. It's a lot of fun.
Do you find, because I've read that you worked on George W. campaign.
Four presidential campaigns.
Mitt Romney.
Romney, George W., Giuliani, and Rick Perry.
Giuliani.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, it's kind of like a presidency where I feel like the thought of, you're running for a president, again, obviously don't have a first-hand experience, but where you're like, I'm going to do this, when you get to the office, they're like, we know you said all those things. You can't do any of that. They were like, but I just prompted. No, I know. We get it. But you can't do that shit. So you have to, is it the same way where we're like, hey, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a make pink sign. And they're like, hey, Vinny, I know where you're coming from. You can't have that. Is there a limitation?
There's and that's just advertising. You know, you have 10 people in a room, 10 people are going to have great ideas.
Sure.
And there's no way to do them all. But one of the cool things about political advertising, like working on the Romney campaign, is you know, if you worked at on the Ford truck account, right? There's a campaign, right? And you right. do the ads that fit in that campaign. In a political thing, we had 10 different campaigns going. It was more like Geico. So really, I had my own little corner of the world where I was running my own little ad campaign.
Got it.
And so really, you try a lot of stuff and you see what sticks, but which is one of the things I like about it.
Would it have to be succinct with the other campaigns?
Generally, but no. You know, I just did a lot of stuff that if it popped into my head. Now, the speed is different. I mean, literally, it would be I'd have an idea in the morning. We would make the commercial late morning. And we would push it out that afternoon and be defending it in the media that night.
Jesus. Because of the speed.
The speed.
The competitors, what they're doing, how they're doing.
And the media. True story. I made a commercial one day and finished it and sent it to our legal department at about 11:30 in the morning. Walked out to go get a sandwich. When I came back with my sandwich, the commercial was on abcnews.com with a 1,000-word breakdown of that commercial.
Wow.
That I had just done in 2 hours.
So somebody reviewed it and already wrote all on it. Wow. Yeah,
the microscope is huge that you live under.
Well, to me, from a very small standpoint on the political side, you and I both live in Plano. Where is the corner that you always see those streets, the yard signs for the politicians, like Park and Custer, I want to say.
Sure, sure.
But I always look at those. And, you know, they're all over the place, people's yards. I'm like, it's a very tiny piece of overall campaign. Can that be better? It's just literally 50 of them.
Oh, my God.
They all look the same. I'm like,
They could all be better.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that drives me crazy. You know, in a local race, like we have city council races going on now. That's maybe the one thing that the most people are going to see. That is a billboard for you. And so they're always like, red, white, and blue, and there's a star, and there's like a ribbon under the person's name, and something that says like "Moving Plano Forward," and that's it. So really, that's what you're doing,
or a picture,
And so, I mean, at least the pictures. I guess maybe you're trying something different than your face is on it. Maybe that's a connection. To me, that is in the world of political advertising, the biggest waste is people don't do a good job. At least there should be something on that sign, like, you know, I'm a big branding guy.
Yeah.
So tell me about your brand. You know, get it down to 3 or 4 words that are meaningful, and put it on the sign.
I'm with you too. And I have my previous life, I was in the marketing world too. Even though I'm not, you know, I don't own an agency, but I have, I think, plenty of opinion when it comes to design.
Don't we all?
Well, sometimes I think I've certainly come across people like, nah, I don't know, whatever you want. But then, like, you know, when you give them something, they're like, I don't like that. I'm like, okay, well, you don't know what you want, but you don't like that.
Right.
So I think to me, it's just like you have this 2 foot by 3, whatever, however big that sign is.
They're 4x4s or 4x8s. They're big.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe when you drive by, they're smaller than they actually look. To me, you have the, I think face is tough, in my opinion. Like, you see realtors putting face on their business card. I'm like, unless you're so secure with that face that it's going to appeal to majority, where people are like, oh, okay, this guy looks trustworthy.
Looks friendly, right.
But then, I'm like, a lot of times you go, it's...
Or distinctive. You know, like, if I had an eye patch, I would do it.
Yeah, eye patch, 100%.
Because it's a good point. He's the eye patch guy.
Good point. You're like, eye patch guy. I don't remember his name, like... Was it Beto who just ran? Who, like, he had that? Even his sign was kind of very basic, but it probably stood out a little bit more.
It was different.
It was slightly different, yeah. And I'm not even looking, like, I'm not political in most of the ways. I think I've lived in New York for 15 years, then I moved here to Texas. So I'm very, and I'm from another country. So I'm very, very, I don't think anyone's 100% right. I think it's somewhere in the middle. So I think it's, you know, not the right, not the left, I don't think it's black and white. So to me, I think, well, those guys have some good ideas, but let's figure out, is there a middle idea? That's why I feel like I'm looking at those signs, not more like, okay, you're moving Plano forward. I'm more like, I could have used a different color or different font, because I see 50 signs.
They're all the same?
Yeah.
They all sound swell. They all seem like nice people. Yeah. It's like, what's the... So, and to me, that's the biggest challenge in marketing and branding. It's like, what's the difference? You know, in the advertising world, we used to call it the unique selling proposition. So what is it that makes it different? Why am I buying this computer over this computer, this car over this car?
Right.
And in some cases, it's just perceived. I mean, there's 100 great cars out there that will get the job done. What's going to make me go buy an Audi instead of a Mercedes? There's some intangible thing that I perceive that, that's a difference that makes that unique.
Right.
And makes people... It makes me look unique to people, too. Sure. So there's also how the reflection of that brand.
Right.
And politics, the marketing in politics, which is why I got into it, really, is appalling on most levels. and you, like you said, you look at those 10 signs, it's like, okay.
Right.
There's a red one, a white one, a blue one. I got it.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm with you. Like, and you see those advertising, the commercials on TV that they're running, you know, it's a black and white where, like, Vinny is a terrible person.
Yeah.
He used to punch little babies. I was like, oh my God, I don't want Vinny for, you know, general counsel because he's punching babies. So I think it's...
And I love doing those.
Well...
And the reason I love doing those is because I don't do them that way. The yeah. best way to do that, if you can do that, if I can say Alex is punching babies,
yeah.
but I can do that in an entertaining and funny way, you will receive that message. And I'll give you a great example of that. Is remember the commercials, the Apple commercials, where it was always two guys standing up there and it was like,
yeah.
Hi, I'm an Apple and I'm a PC.
Yeah.
Go back and look at those commercials, really listen to them. They're mean. They are mean, aggressive, angry, negative commercials. But they're funny.
Yeah.
And you love them. So there's those... My feeling is people don't hate negative ads. People hate bad ads.
Sure.
So if you find a way to get that message, whatever that message is, and get it across to people in a way they want to receive it,
mm-hmm.
that's critical. Rather than just go, here's what, oh, Alex is a terrible guy, Alex punches puppies,
right.
He's a mean guy, don't vote for him. Well, whatever, who cares? Yeah. But if I did that in an interesting way, you'd be more likely to receive that message.
I mean, I'm with you. I think content, right, the quality and the whatever you do, whether it's a political ad or ad for Coca-Cola or whatever mm-hmm. it is, that's what... You know, you want to be entertained, especially nowadays where it's like everyone... Like, I was listening to a comedian who was talking about how... Because I think comedians have become... You have to be almost not only good at comedy, you have to be pretty savvy at business and marketing.
Sure.
Because I think the idea is that there's a lot... You know, when you go to Netflix, one of the comedians I was listening to, he was saying, I found that I couldn't get a special anywhere. And even though there's a joke about... It's not special anymore because everyone's had one. You know, it's really special. Now just everyone has one. And he said, I found that I couldn't get a deal, but then I would release a small bits, right? You know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes on YouTube. And people who were telling me about the special that they were watching of other comedians on Netflix, they were not finishing them because they were too long.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would, like, after I listened, I was like, he's right. I've started, unless you, like, Gaffigan, who got me, like, I've listened to the whole thing.
Sure.
Even though I've listened to his over the course of, like, 2 days or something like that, I did find, I'm like, unless you really grip me, like, I'm probably 20 minutes into it and I'm probably out.
Yeah.
Unless it's somebody I already know. And then when I come in, I already, you know, the brand is there and he's delivering what I want. Because I've listened to Rogan's special. And that was a little bit tough for me to get through because I think it wasn't where I wanted to be.
Right,
and
right.
So this guy released 15 minutes and he said, what I've noticed is that people didn't want to watch those hour specials. But the guy who runs my YouTube, he said, he would tell me, hey, you know, this person watched your stuff for 10 minutes yeah. at a time, but 2 hours later, they're still doing it.
Right.
So it's almost right. like, don't tell me to watch this, but I'll do it on my own.
I love that comics now have the word metadata in their vocabulary, sure. right? And it's true. And I think, you know, that's a little bit of just life, how we are. Mm-hmm. You know, as our attention spans shrink and shrink. Our attention span right now, average attention span is 9 seconds. For a person, and so
it's like,
you know,
it's like a goldfish.
Right? Yeah, but in the old days of advertising, all the TV commercials were 60 seconds long, and when they went, oh, we got to go to 30 seconds. Well, all the ad agencies went nuts. But we can't tell a story in 30 seconds. Now I can buy a 6 second ad unit online, and that's plenty of time, really, for me to you know, give one quick point in my name.
Sure.
But people will absorb 6 seconds. People will tolerate 15 seconds. But they get downright bored at 30. You know,
as
it changes, we have to adjust how we communicate to that. And I think that's, you know, those bite-sized comedy pieces that are 90 seconds, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, 10 minutes is a long time. That's a commitment.
Right. Right,
to sit down for 10 minutes.
Well, and I think the thought also, not only do you deliver that in that short bits, but at the same time, a lot of the young comedians, that's how they get into it, right? They're not... you might not know them, but someone shared a clip and you're like, oh, cool, that's, I don't know who this guy is. But he's, again, assuming your content is good, you're like, okay, let me listen more of this guy. Yeah. Like, because I've certainly come across a bunch of people. And I was like, oh, this guy's funny. Like, I've never seen him, never heard him. And that's, if you're Jerry Seinfeld, you probably don't need necessarily that. Although, I don't think it's, I don't think it's a bad thing.
He doesn't. But that's the same way we introduce new brands now. You know, movement watches, MVMT watches. Mm-hmm. That's how they started. You know, and it's all social and very short things. Sure. They've now since moved to television. You know, that they've become a bigger brand and need to reach out to more people. You know, blue microphones. I mean, that's how they started. It's all very short, little bits, and all on social and all on digital media. So how we introduce those brands, that's a great reflection of that.
Isn't your thought, like you said, Movement Watches, who's kind of an online, cutting the middleman out directly to consumer kind of deal.
That's their pitch,
yeah. I mean, the back end, who knows? They're still probably making watches for like $2 and selling it for $150.
Of course they are.
And making you tell them, like, look how cheap we are.
But they're happy to, they want to be, you know, they're all about that community thing. It's like, oh, well, you know, make sure you can buy stuff off our Instagram feed. And, sure. And you know, so that's their pitch.
Do you find that someone like that who maybe created a brand online where it's social media, going to TV? I mean, it's like I've cut my cord, you know, a year, 2 years ago now, and I was very scared. I was like, oh my God, I don't, you know, I'm not a sports guy, so that wasn't an issue for me. But, you know, how about those 400 channels that I never watched? What if I already decided to watch one of those channels?
And yeah.
I can't say that I've missed anything.
I think that's all changing, though, too. I think it's really funny. Right now, the sales of HD TV antennas is booming. So a lot of cord cutters, my daughter, I'll give her an example.
Well,
you have one. She just got one, and she's like, you know, now she's got live sports, and she's got 130 HD channels. Doesn't know what they are, but she's getting them over the air. Because I think people, be careful what you ask for. People want a choice, but it's like, well, am I going to pay $8 a month to watch HGTV, a couple more months a month? You know, and then now I've got this, I got to keep up with an app for ESPN and HBO. And shit. It's like,
sure.
You know, now I just traded one headache for another one.
Right.
So I think that's what's really cool about that. Like when I was a little kid, there were three channels, maybe four, because we lived in New York. We had PBS, so we were high tone. But now there's, you know, there's so much more and so many things that are channels. You know, Netflix is a channel. Amazon Prime is a channel. You know, all these other things we're vying for what is media in the media landscape.
Right.
And so, you know, right now it's a little weird, but I think it's weird brings opportunity. Because right now there's more content being created, more movies, more shows, more content, more podcasts than ever in the history of broadcasting by tenfold.
Right.
So there's so many more opportunities to be creative, but in these small little bites.
I think what I was trying to say is that Movement and Watches. Do you? And I don't know if that's true. Like I've heard you say they're bigger now than when they were started, where they grew to that they're doing TV ads. Is there a need for doing still TV ads? Considering like a really good podcast probably gets more listeners and viewers than, you know, a show on CNN or a network. So are they going to a TV? Like, is that really even a need anymore?
You know what? If they are running on television, there's when you see somebody first do it, it's a test. If they continue to do it, they wouldn't do it if it didn't work. I mean, that's basically it. So I think it's sort of like if you look at their sales funnel, mm-hmm. right? I would think their problem is they are not dumping enough people into the top of their sales funnel. So television and the people they want to talk to who are young, stylish men, mm-hmm. that's who they make the watches for, they're watching sports, they're watching some of that other stuff. So they want to dump more of those guys in the top of their funnel. And they wouldn't, you know, if it wasn't working, if they didn't have the data to back it up, they wouldn't and shouldn't do it.
Right.
So there's, you know, I get to hear TV is dead all the time.
Yeah.
But when people want to move big numbers, they go to TV and radio. So it's not dead. It's just changing what it means to be TV.
Right. To me, I think you mentioned about like having hundreds of channels on TV. I kept thinking, you know, and no one really came to fix it where someone will say, hey, Vinny, I know you like HGTV. I know you like whatever, Food Network and a couple other things. Why don't we package it for you this way versus I have 400 channels. Let's be honest, average person leaves, you know, in the morning, goes to work, comes back in the evening between kids and busy life.
Yeah.
You're watching TV for an hour or two, and chances are you'll never get to those other channels that, you know, so it's just silly to me that cable companies never adapted to that. And, and we both know that someone's going to come like, you know what? Watch this. He's like, and Netflix, like, I'm going to take this over, and we're going to do it this way.
And we're seeing products that do that, and cable is trying to do that. And here's let me give you the perspective from crass advertising guy, because here's what I want, and now we're starting to be able to get that. So I want to be able to push, and if you're the person that I need to market to, if Alex is that person I need to market to, I've got the data on you, your house, your address, you. I want to be able to push an ad into your house no matter what channel you're watching. I want to be channel agnostic.
Meaning, as in media channel or
whether
TV?
You're watching HGTV, whether you're watching football, whether you're watching news. Right. I don't want to care. I want to be the person. I want to go right to the person. So I want to push my ad for Ginsu knives to you no matter what channel you're watching.
Okay.
Which is sort of anti-creative in a way.
Sure.
But if I can do that, if cable is beginning to deliver that now, addressable advertising, where I push that ad to you. And then your neighbor, you might like puppies, so I push you an ad about puppies, or your neighbor might like kittens, so I push an ad with kittens to your neighbor. That's where we're going. Some people claim to have that. We may or may not be there yet. We're getting close.
Sure. So I guess you still feel that even though despite people saying TV is dead or radio is dead, it's still, there's plenty of money being spent, advertising money spent in that channel.
Yeah, and depending on who you're going for.
Sure.
You know, and what they're doing. It's tough. It's much tougher. I mean, in the olden days, you could buy TV and you'd get a big audience right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, for example, men 25 and under, they're not watching TV. Very rarely. They're probably watching for maybe a particular sporting event that they might keep up with. So very tough audience to get. But there's other ways to get them. So, you know, it's become very fragmented. As an advertising person, it's tough. It's very difficult to build a big audience. Like, I'll give you an example. Way back when, in the 60s, The Beverly Hillbillies was a big TV show. Have you ever heard of The Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah, for sure.
And the country was only about 150 million population.
Right.
25 million people would watch that show. So you'd reach a giant Super Bowl-sized audience once a week. So there were only three channels. And everybody watched that show, and everybody talked about it the next day. Right. Now, there's no way, you know, like a big network show, 1.5 million.
Yeah.
Well,
so, and I think that's exactly, it's funny how it works, right? Like late night shows, right? Carson or whoever it was, it was like, because there's just not that he was good, not that he wasn't, but it's like, what else are you doing? There's a one or two, you know, there's no Netflix, there's no HBO, there's nothing. So you're watching that now, as you said, like before it was, if you're not getting 20 mil, that's not good. Now it's like, I got 1.5 million. Great.
Yeah. And he was such a powerful force in society at that time.
Sure.
Because everybody watched Carson before they went to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what you talked about, you know, all the opportunities, the podcasts and all the opportunities for everybody to do their stuff. It, for an advertiser, it's really tough to gather a big audience. Yeah. So if I buy a podcast, I got to buy 1,000 podcasts to get enough people.
Or if you get, to me, I think I hear like in the podcast world as I get deeper and deeper into it, where there's a lot of independent guys. There's also people trying to make networks, which also there's an opinion where like, why are you, it's almost like you're joining a, you know, Comedy Central or NBC. You could literally do everything without them. So like what, I mean, is it distribution? I mean, they're still putting you on the same, now, you know, on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or whatever it is. So the only thing they could possibly offer you is maybe more money towards promoting your podcast and paying to push it out there. But
it has nothing to do with your podcast. What it has to do with is me. So the Gimlets of the world are going to come to you and go, hey, look, here's this package of a 1,000 podcasts that we know have your audience, men 35 to 45.
Sure.
So we'll stick that all together and we're going to put your ad on here.
Right.
So what they're trying to do is what I want them to do, which is collect a big audience for me.
Well, as you said, like agnostic, where you go. But I mean, from an individual podcaster, I feel like there's no like a music label, right? There's almost no point of joining a music label for an artist because you could do the same things a label for you potentially could do.
But as a podcast, they can provide you ads to monetize your podcast.
But
so
yeah,
that's ultimately
and maybe it's and again fund you for if you need a studio, whatever it is, upfront cost, which again you're probably giving up a big chunk of your revenue or ownership and things like that. Which to me, again, it makes sense, but I think obviously someone like Rogan, who's been doing it, or Dax Shepard, who has a name, where I think
has a million downloads a month, you know, and all that stuff. So that's a big audience that somebody would want to buy. Now, the ultimate thing is, you know, in podcasting, like everything else, you've got to have that unique selling proposition.
Sure.
What is it that makes that different? You know, in Rogan, you've got that connection with Rogan. That's what he's offering you. You kind of like that. You sort of feel like, you know, you have a relationship.
Yeah,
you know,
like you know the guy.
Right. Well, you know, and then the Serial podcast, right? They're telling that great story. So that's that's their corner of the world. We tell these great, you know, season-long crime stories.
Right.
You know, so it's with how many podcasts are out there? There must be, you know, hundreds of thousands of podcasts. Awesome. What makes one stick out that I want to listen to it?
Yeah,
so it's always about that message.
Like anything else, right? Like what makes a good ad? There's a million ads in there, and what makes it different? So to me, I think when I was reading about you, about the political world that you were advertising, I'm like, it's very, because I don't know how much more limited those ads could be versus if you're doing an ad for GoDaddy or somebody else, where I feel like sometimes corporate world, even though I'm sure they're very, like I work at Coke back in the day, and it was, you know, I worked for Vitamin Water, and then Vitamin Water got bought by Coke, and the reason Coke liked Vitamin Water is because they were edgy and cool and new, and then they're like, once they bought them, they're like, okay, we're gonna do the way we do everything. We're like, you guys liked this because we were different. You
know? Right, then we threw it all.
Yeah, exactly. And then the big red curtain comes in, and they're like, we're gonna, well, you know.
The big red curtain, I love it. Well, and in politics, too, you're starting off in a hole because everybody hates politics. Everybody hates politics. Yeah. Everybody hates political ads. And also in focus groups, people, if you sit down and ask people, have you ever watched an ad and that played into your decision to buy something? 100% they'll tell you no. Even though we know for a fact that's not true.
Yeah.
But no one ever thinks that they're influenced by that. And politics is even worse. You know, so we're starting in this hole of, we hate you.
Tell us why we should vote for you. Right? Well, and I think more and more, I mean, again, not a brand, you know, I'm not a marketing company owner, but at the same time, as you said, everyone has an opinion. Like, I was just listening to, I think it was a podcast, and then I read a separate article on Andrew Yang, you know, that guy. I think he's a Democrat running for president out of New York on, what's his platform? The Universal Basic Income, I think that was his. Like, I'm listening to him, despite of what he stands for. He's a very simple guy, very just, you know, he's Asian, who speaks clear English, which, you know, everyone's already has their own prejudice. He's like, oh, he speaks clear English. All right, I think I'm in. You know, let's hear more. Despite as much as you want to hate to think that way, but at the same time, I don't remember a last candidate got anywhere that was not, you know, Latino, black, white, something where it's within that. So I think, I don't remember, and again, I'm not that deep into politics where there was an Asian candidate that got as far as where I was able to notice him, or majority of the country was able to notice
him. What he's doing has nothing to do with politics. What he's really doing is borrowed interest. And he's using that platform. I'm going to run for president so that he can get some media time and get some
coverage.
You know, so makes I say, sense. God bless. That's the American way. I mean, obviously, he's not a legit candidate, but you've heard of him, and he's getting his name out there. So, you know.
So, do you think it's more for business advantage?
Who knows? Some personal advantage. I mean,
it's more of like, you remember me running it? Like, they're like, oh, Andrew Yang, now I could speak.
Right. I could run for something else, or I could be a speaker. And all that. So, that's, you know what? And that's good fun. And that's one of the things I love about presidential politics is that anybody can throw their hat in the ring and, you know, what you will have a couple crazy guys and, who wear buckets on their head or whatever. And it's, you know, it's kind of all good fun.
But I think to me, what I thought was pretty good, again, whatever he does is, I have no idea as far as numbers, actually, if you what his intent is, but he's delivered very basic, very simple. He's not trying to speak very big words and confused general America. They're like, well, I didn't know what that word meant, but sounds like he knows what he's talking about, you know. But he was like, I think we're gonna do this, I think people are suffering. I'm like, yeah, that's very simple talk, you know. And I think the more and more you do that, where the podcast, where, you know, you have a, I don't know, Miami CSI, who's a highly produced show, versus Rogan, who's just two guys in the room just shooting the shit, you know.
Right.
Meanwhile, he's getting way more audience than someone who spent millions of dollars on producing a show. I understand, you know, Game of Thrones, which is a highly produced show, gets a lot of, but then you can also get a lot more people listening to you, where just two guys in the mic.
And it's a different creative outlet. You know, and it's a different message. It's different. And people want different things. I mean, you know, you're listening to podcasts, and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I don't want to listen to them with all my entertainment time.
Correct.
Sometimes I want to go see a movie that's beautifully made, and I want to see a TV show that's really interesting, or read a book. Yeah. You know, so that's, and you know, so it's just another, it's another style of input, and in a way to get that message. It's a great time to be alive, Alex.
Amen. I think, to me, when I was initially kind of getting into or was listening to podcasts, and when I, the more I read about who's doing what the audience is, because when I got into it, I think I was first started listening in 2014, and I listened to the one, like, well-produced podcasts where it's, you could tell that, you know, the guys really know how to edit audio, and then you got into something that's very basic, and I was amazed how many people were listening to the basic, where I thought the barrier of entry was like, well, you have to have a studio, you have to have an editor, you have to have a very high-end everything. Meanwhile, you know, Rogan, who does have very good quality audio and everything else, but meanwhile, if he does it on a smartphone, he'll probably get just as big of an audience because of, at this point, he's built into it.
And now you have the podcasts that are very well produced, but trying to sound basic.
Yeah.
Like My Dad Wrote a Porno. I don't know if you've ever listened to that one. Very funny, but it's three comedians, and they're all like talking about this, you know, over the, you know, it sounds like they're around the kitchen table. They're not around the kitchen table. It's all very well produced, but it feels super off the cuff and very authentic and very funny.
Mom and pop.
And they go do live shows, and they've got a book, and you know, so it's all very, very super monetized.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can I ask, speaking of books, you wrote a book, right?
I wrote a book, and I'm writing another book. So I'll have to come on the end of the summer when the new book is.
Can I ask, the first book, I've kind of briefly read, I didn't read the book, but I read the description. Can you give me an idea what?
Book number one is a fiction book. It's like a comedy crime thriller called Spare Me, and it's about a mob that buys a bowling alley that's losing money to launder money through a bowling alley.
Sure.
So it's a lot of fun. A lot of people get killed, and it's just a real good fun mob bowling story.
How did the story come about?
It came about through characters, you know, and I loved all these characters and people I would meet, and I love people, and I love to hear how they talk, and so I sort of came up with this cast of characters and put them in this situation, and then just sort of typed, and that's how we wound up with the book. But it's all these colorful characters. What the book is all about, not to sound like eighth grade English teacher, but it's all about respect. And that people in the world want to get respect, whether they are bowlers, don't get any respect. Somebody who wants to be on the pro bowling tour doesn't get any respect. Crime boss, a hitman, they all want to get respect. But it's a lot of fun, and it's on Amazon. So Spare Me.
I did see. Yeah, I noticed that. I was looking through the graphics and stuff. I did see the bowling pins on it. And I'm like, Vinny's advertising guy writing not an advertising book, which is, I like the change for it. As far as the content, what do you, I guess, currently, what do you watch, or what do you enjoy? Like comedy shows, or what do you normally get into?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm spending a lot of time playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey. So I'm a little obsessed with that at the moment.
Is that, I'm
PlayStation.
But I mean, so is it online, or is
no,
it just...
No, you buy it. It's you know, it's a first-person adventure shooter game.
So you're not playing with other players from other countries?
No. They can all do their own thing. I got my own thing.
Is that a new hobby, or is it you?
I've always been a little bit of a gamer, but I've gotten really hooked on this one. So this is
especially nowadays. I feel like the new stuff that would have you dabbled into the virtual reality or anything like that?
A little. I you know, for some reason it just doesn't do it for me. I mean, I think it'll catch on. It's just a little.
Is premature.
I don't know. It just not. It just doesn't connect with me. You know, I like. You know, I don't find that there's well made. So okay. I'm a sucker for production value.
Yeah.
And Assassin's Creed Odyssey looks like a movie that you're in.
Yeah.
So I sort of love that.
Well, which is, yeah, a little interaction that with video games I've seen, like the new stuff is amazing. I mean, I come from Russia where, you know, I've played just basic stuff, just very...
Yeah, and a Pong game.
Yeah, exactly. And so from there to now, it's amazing it's how... Great. You know, sometimes I say that not just video games, but in general, like I grew up in Central Asia and now I'm in the States. I feel like not only, you know, the time 20-some years passed since I've been there... I feel like 100-some years passed because I've played with rocks and now I have a screen that I can touch. You know?
Right.
So to me, it's, you know, and some of those people are still living at a certain level where, you know, the technology progressed so fast and so much. But in my mind, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it's the same lifetime that, and it's not 100 years later.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's cool. And then I'm working on another book based on, it's called Hope and Fear. And it's called Hope and Fear, the only two things you need to persuade anybody of anything. That'll be at the end of the summer. So we'll have to do this again.
I think I've heard your, was it TEDx I found uh-huh. you first came across?
Yep.
You had by the way, how does someone get selected for be a speaker on TEDx?
You know, they ask for a little, you know, like a little minute and a half of rap about what you're going to talk about. And I think that's sort of like a little audition tape. So they want it to be...
They found you.
No, I found them. Yeah, I found them. And, you know, I think they want an interesting topic and they want to make sure, you know, you're an interesting person and you're not a stiff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, just, you know, a little audition, like a minute and a half.
Which makes sense. Yeah. And I think the whole TEDx platform, isn't it based on like 17 minutes or however long?
I think 18 max. Really, really fun. You know, it was sort of like... stand-up comedy, but they're forced to laugh.
Yeah. They
paid to come, so they're staying, right?
I saw the the whole topic was, I think, was kind of like your book. I think
was it was all about hope and fear and simplifying those motivations.
Which I think I feel like you're a pretty engaging speaker. When I listened to quite a few of them. I didn't go to the live event, but I think the idea is that being in advertising previously, and I was like, interesting point of view that you are, you know, any advertising usually like, hey, they're motivating your emotions, right? They're
sure.
Like, are you scared? Are you like, oh my God, that's going to be amazing? And, you know, and you're like, because I've bought things we all have on an emotional standpoint. It's like, I like this car. That's not the best, but I really like it.
You know? I look good in it.
Yeah.
It makes me look good. You
exactly,
know? Exactly. And this kind of bit, I was just reading an article the other day about how facts don't sell things. Facts don't convince people.
Sure.
And we want them to. It's like, oh, gee, if they only understood the facts, they would believe what I believe.
Right.
And that's, it's just not how we work. That's why, you know, from caveman days, you know, storytellers were always very important. And to convince people to, all right, well, we need to move the tribe here for better food. You know, and it's always been these emotional cells and not factual cells.
Sure.
Factual cells are, the only place that really takes place anymore is in a courtroom. And you if you're in the jury, you have to sit there and listen to it.
Right.
And even that, a really successful trial lawyer plays on your emotions.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, you know, and I try to, you know, making a decision whether you're buying a car or, you know, I try to like, okay, I know I'm emotional, like anyone else. Okay, what do I like? And then you're like, I really like that car. Like, you know, once you facts are next to each other. Like, I know my wife, her and I have, you know, conversation back and forth where she's trying to buy something or she thinks we should do this versus that. It's always a combo of, well, yeah, I get it. I hear what you're saying, but I think this is better. You know, it's always, it's a little bit of that all the time. It's like,
look, if it was down to facts, you know, you wouldn't have a fancy washing machine. You know, now people are getting fancy washing machines with computers in them.
Right.
You know, the old washing machines wash clothes the same way. If it was all down to facts, we'd all drive 2005 Toyota Camrys. Because they were fine cars, so they would still make them. We would all buy them, and that would be it.
And they last, and they go on
forever. We'd all buy beige 2005 Toyota Camrys.
Yeah.
But we don't, because we want to look good. We want fancy things. We want new. We want, you know, there's an emotional connection.
Sure.
Do you need a Bentley? No, you don't need a Bentley. It's cool to have a Bentley. You look great in a Bentley.
Yeah. Terrible investment. But
it's a terrible investment. But people know you're rich because you have a Bentley.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So there's a, it's, it makes no sense, but it's legit.
Sure, sure. And you said, speaking of cars, when you had a podcast before, you were into cars, I guess?
Yes, or yeah.
In which capacity?
I just love them. I race them. I've got an old car in the garage, and it's just a genetic defect. I just love cars.
Genetic defect? Is that
how you say it? My dad, my brothers, and my sister, we're all
so do you restore them, or do you just...
Right, we've done everything. We race them, we have them, we buy them.
And what do you... I'm not a necessarily car guy, but what do you... I feel like I've gotten into listen to other car guys talk about, which, you know, I feel like it's always fascinating to... I enjoy someone who is really into something,
right,
or really good at something.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always fun to hear speakers, hear them do the thing.
Yeah.
So do you... Is there a specific type of car? Or
what I have right now is a 1962 MG.
Okay.
And
it's like a two-seater.
In the world of cars, it's a terrible car. It has no windows. It has no radio, no air conditioning, no heater, no door handles.
Yeah.
It's just the basic, pure sports car from the 1960s. It's an engine, a body, and a windshield.
Okay.
And that's it. So
it's super unsafe.
Pretty much. But it is, what I love about it is it's a pure emotional feeling when you drive it. Even at 20 miles an hour, you're so connected, and it's just a weird, hard-to-explain emotional thing.
The only reason it's funny, like, I would normally...
And I look really good in it.
That's what matters. You got a full head of hair, sunglasses, that's all that matters.
But it is kind of flattering. People do stop and go, gee, can I take my picture with your car?
That's cool.
I'm like, oh,
and I'm assuming in good shape.
Yeah, it looks nice. Yeah.
Do you restore it?
No. I just drive it.
I think, I don't know if you ever heard, there's a restaurant in, I want to say it's like downtown Dallas, around like Trinity Grove, called Town Hearth, I want to say.
Okay.
And the restaurateur, the guy that owns Neighborhood Services, a couple other restaurants, but he opened, and I'm a food junkie, love me good food, like many others. But I seek that stuff out, and always tell them, like, what's... And, you know, coming from New York, where it's just Mecca food, coming here, I was a little scared, because coming to Plain, I was like, oh my God, there's nothing but Chili's and Fridays, and in my opinion, kind of a not great places to eat. And the longer I've stayed here, you know, you realize there's more places opened, there's a lot more places than I thought it was once you start looking at it.
Yeah.
But that guy has...
We like to eat.
Yeah, love to eat. And so he opened at the restaurant. I guess it's in a new American style, I guess, food, like steaks and things like that. But the whole place has this probably, I want to say like 50 chandeliers, this giant kind of crystal chandeliers. But it's not like a fancy necessarily area. He has that. Then he has this giant fish tank in the middle. Like, you can Google online. It's cool to... I would highlight...
And you know why he has the chandeliers, Alex?
Why?
Because they're cheap. Office buildings all used to have those chandeliers in them for years. And as we've redone these office buildings to make them more modern, there are boxes and boxes of giant chandeliers in warehouses all over the country.
I can't speak to...
now they're ironic.
It doesn't look like they're cheap. I could be wrong. I don't know what quality...
No, I'm sure they're very nice, but nobody wants them.
Sure, sure. But he has this crystal chandelier, which is very, as you said, not really something you see anymore. Yeah. It's usually like minimal, like very clean lighting. So he has that. The rest of the place doesn't look like you would think it's like a ballroom in the castle. It doesn't. It looks very kind of a clean American looking. And then he has this giant fish tank. I mean, we're talking like as big as this room, where inside of it is a submarine. Like a real small submarine that has, I think it's like a yellow, that's supposedly a mine detector from World War II. So it's very cool. And on top of that, he has above the bar. Again, this guy went like, what can I do that's not been done? Or at least not here.
And what do I have laying around that I need to hang on the wall in my restaurant? I
can't imagine he has that laying around. And then he has a Bugatti, old Bugatti motorcycle on top of the bar. And then that's not done. And then in front of like where the kitchen meets the main room, it's fairly open, there's a MG.
There you go.
A full-size MG standing there. And I was watching the waiters and everything. I'm like, it looked very, it looks cool if you come to eat.
Yeah.
As far as aesthetic or logistics of getting around it, it wasn't look like it was the best idea, because you constantly have to get around it. And then it was standing on some kind of wheels where you can kind of move it if you want to. But it's definitely was cool factor, but not... I'm like, how many times did people spill stuff into it?
I'm sure,
Because it's very... But that's the only reason I know MG, because I've never heard that brand. And
you're not allowed to eat in my MG.
No?
No.
There's no cup holders?
There's right? No cup holders anyway.
Yeah. Well, you drive it every
week? I drive it every week.
All the time? Yeah. I guess now that it's warm. So is there a top to it or is it just
completely? There's a top, yeah. But I don't put it up, then people won't see me. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I read somewhere where the convertibles, where they're manufactured going away. I don't know if they went away or still going away, where no one buying them, essentially. And then realizing that the car manufacturer is like, well, it's not worth it. It's cool, but you see like one guy, you know, every once in a while no one's doing it.
I love the convertible, but that's a pot for another podcast.
Sure.
Convertible talk.
All right, Vinny. Well, last thing I'd say, I appreciate the time. If you want to plug any social media handles or anything you have that, I know that you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter at YoVinny.
Yo, Vinny.
Yeah, so that my Twitter handle, and then I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and all that. And
are you on Instagram?
Got the book. I'm on Instagram. It's Vinny Min on Instagram. VINNYMIN.
Okay.
And then book coming out at the end of the summer.
And what's the name of the book?
It's going to be Hope and Fear.
Hope and Fear. And what's the name of the Glass House?
Glass House Strategy, and is the agency glasshousestrategy.com.
Okay.
Check that out, and check out Spare Me on Amazon.
Sounds awesome. Thank you so much again for your time, and definitely do it again.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
As always, thanks again for tuning into a podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I have a bunch more in the works, just trying to coordinate schedules and such with different guests. And until next time, peace, motherfuckers.